We'll surf on the Reverb Hour. Let's start tonight with ECOATM on the Wave of the West, KFJC, Los Altos Hills.
Thank you.
89.7 KFJC. That was the John Busson Trio. Lots of cheesy organ in there. We heard Zina, Zina, Zina from the album Inferno. Began the set with ECOATM, as you said. ECOATM. Self-titled album. I'm playing all vinyl tonight on Stream of Consciousness. Coming up on Saturday, the 18th of Mayhem, a special event here at Foothill College in Appreciation Hall, starting at 7 p.m. We'll have a screening of the documentary film Sound of the Surf, a QA with special guest John Blair, music by Frankie and the Pool Boys. We're requesting a $10 donation to benefit KFJC. And good news, the parking is free. Hope to see you there. Let's go on with more vinyl. Dexter and Franz on the Wave of the West, KFJC.
Thank you.
89.7 KFJC. That was Ferrani and Teicher doing Busman's Holiday from the album Blast Off. And I began the set with Dexter and Franz, Plant Talkers. Their album's called Flamingo Heights. The California State Library Zip Books program provides public library users with speedy access to books that are not otherwise available at their local libraries. Patrons request items. Libraries purchase those items directly, and the items are shipped directly to the home address of the patron. When finished, the book is returned to the library and added to the collection. Zip books are available in 96 library systems statewide. For more information, contact your local public library or visit library.ca.gov/services. I'm Cousin Mary. This is an all-vinyl stream of consciousness. I kind of was digging in the shelves and found something that might be interesting. We'll see. It's Don Chamberlain, who did a broadcast on the anniversary of the San Francisco earthquake, and this is the recording. Let's see what you think. On the Wave of the West, KFJC.
San Francisco, April 18th, 1906, 5:12 a.m. Earthquake, an exciting subject of conversation whenever San Franciscans gather. The fault lines are nearly as familiar to us as the names of our streets. San Andreas, Hayward, Calaveras. Our relationship with earthquakes is one of love-hate. We know another major quake will cause extensive death, injury, and damage. Yet, we are totally fascinated by it. Time, of course, has polished the rough edge of reality and has made the great quake of 1906 something to be placed alongside the cable car in terms of our nostalgic pride. This is a recreation in sound and feeling of the history of April 18th, 1906 in documentary news form, as though it were happening now. The information has been carefully authenticated by the California Historical Society. The reports from the field, the sounds, the voices, the tragedy, and sometimes comedy will be as they were years ago. It was real, very real in 1906, and experts say it will be real again.
I'm Fred Chamberlain, Radio San Francisco. It has now been confirmed. Minutes ago, a gigantic earthquake struck Northern California, centered in the San Francisco Bay Area. No information yet on the loss of life or the extent of the damage, but we do know that a number of fires are burning right now in the city, and firefighters apparently are faced with more than they can handle. The first quake hit us at 12 minutes past 5 this morning, and there have been a number of aftershocks. There is no telephone service, and public transportation is completely out. There are also early reports that the water mains were damaged. Reporter Richard Bodie is out in the field, right now at the fire station home of Chief Dennis Sullivan.
Engine company number 2 here on Bush Street has been heavily damaged by the earthquake. As you know, Chief and Mrs. Sullivan have their official residence here on the 3rd floor. I haven't seen the chief. Some of the firemen say he's still inside somewhere. I can't get in. A lot of rubble and dust. It looks as though the interior is completely collapsed. Deputy Fire Chief Doherty is coming out of the station now. Sir, what's happening in there? Where's Chief Sullivan?
The Chief and Mrs. Sullivan are both alive. God be praised. The Mrs. is bruised and shaken up, but the Chief is badly hurt. He's unconscious.
What happened?
The Sullivans were asleep, and the earthquake knocked over the brick smokestacks of the California Hotel back at the station. They came down through the roof of our fire station all the way to the 1st floor, carrying the Sullivans with them. We've just now managed to get the Chief clear of the wreckage, and we're taking both of them to the Southern Pacific Hospital. Here's the ambulance wagon. Clear the way, please.
Mr. Doherty, that means you're in charge. What's the damage and fire situation in San Francisco?
Look, I can't talk to you now. Maybe later. Building's down, a lot of fires. Excuse me. I have to see to the chief.
Well, Fred, you heard Doherty. He's acting fire chief now. No one knows how many fires are burning or what earthquake damage our city has suffered. But I can see some smoke down across Market Street, and the men here are hitching up to respond to that. This is Richard Bodie at Engine Company Number 2 on Bush Street.
Here in the studio, we've had word that most of the damage is in that area south of the slot, south of Market Street. We have reporter Bruce Collins standing by there. Bruce, what's happening?
It's a nightmare. Buildings are collapsed or shoved off their foundations. It's like a giant was playing games. There's a strong smell of gas in the air. Obviously, some gas mains are broken. People dead. I can see the bodies of a dozen or so laid out side by side in the street, and more people are trapped in the wreckage. We can hear them screaming for help. The firemen and citizen volunteers are digging frantically to free them. Here's a fireman who's just brought an unconscious child out of the building. Sir.
As soon as I catch my breath. A lot of smoke in there. Doctor, take care of this child.
Any more people in there?
We got them all out of that building, but hundreds of others throughout this entire district are still trapped.
It looks like the earth just opened up and swallowed some of the buildings.
No, that's not it. Beneath the ground are some old stream beds. The ground buckled and settled, and the buildings just slid into the craters. But that's not the worst of it,
sir.
The fires. We have no water to fight the fires.
No water?
We open the hydrants, get a trickle of water, then nothing.
At the studio, we heard reports that the water mains were damaged by the quake.
Hydrant after hydrant, no water. How do they expect us to fight fires without water?
That fireman is right. The fires are flaring up as far as I can see. Rooming houses like the Valencia, Brunswick, Denver, and Cosmopolitan are already destroyed. And there doesn't appear to be any way to save the others. This is Bruce Collins in the Mission District and south of the slot.
So that's the tragic picture at this moment. To repeat our earlier information, the earthquake struck at 5:12 this morning, starting a number of fires in the city. Some say as many as 50. Chief Dennis Sullivan is seriously hurt. Doherty is now acting fire chief. But there's no water with which to fight those fires. We'll have another report on the earthquake shortly as information arrives in our studio. I'm Fred Chamberlain, Radio San Francisco.
San Francisco was totally unprepared to deal with the earthquake and the subsequent fires. Sullivan was never able to command. He died of his injuries 3 days later. Water mains were empty. The quake had ripped apart the underground aqueducts used to transport water into the city. Historians point to a number of ironies. Only 7 months earlier, the National Board of Fire Underwriters had found San Francisco's water system seriously lacking. The board told City Hall that the hydrant system could not possibly protect the city from a major outbreak of simultaneous fires, and the earthquake destroyed even that inadequate supply. Fire Chief Sullivan, with 26 years in the department, was perhaps too good a firefighter. For years, he had argued with the supervisors to build a supplementary saltwater firefighting system by piping water from the bay into dozens of long-ignored cisterns beneath the streets. But because Sullivan's department had been successful in battling huge fires in the past with the existing system, the supervisors ignored his repeated requests. And time ran out the morning of April 18th, 1906. Another irony, many people in San Francisco were disaster conscious. Only the day before, a meeting was held in the courtroom of Judge W.W. Morrow.
Gentlemen, it's agreed, then, that we should form volunteer committees to prepare for whatever emergencies might befall our city. I will notify Mayor Schmitz of our action today, reminding him that this move is prompted by disasters in other parts of the world. The earthquake in Formosa that killed 50 people, the mine accident in France that killed 1,000 men, and the eruption of Vesuvius in Italy only last week, in which hundreds died and entire towns were destroyed. Meeting adjourned.
About that eruption of Vesuvius, Los Angeles citizens collected $10,000 for Italian relief to be sent on the 19th. But the morning of the 18th, the money was diverted to San Francisco. So disaster committees had been formed the day before, but no group of men, however well-meaning, was ready for the San Francisco earthquake and fire, April 18th, 1906.
It's 10 a.m., and I'm Fred Chamberlain, Radio San Francisco. Information on the great earthquake early this morning is coming in rapidly, and we have a more precise picture now of what's happening. Damage is heavy. Many people are dead, hundreds at least. Not just in San Francisco, but up and down the coast. Imagine a line 20 to 40 miles wide, running from Fort Bragg to the north of us to Salinas in the south. A line 200 miles long. That's the extent of the quake and of the destruction it caused. Santa Rosa reports many buildings down, some people killed. And in the South Bay, Agnew's Insane Asylum is the scene of tragedy. Reporter James Corder is there.
It's a terrible scene here at Agnew's Asylum. The buildings are just masses of mortar and brick now. Inmates and guards are crushed or trapped beneath it all. It's ghastly, worst thing I've ever seen. I can hear people crying out for help. Those who escaped the falling ceilings and walls are digging desperately with shovels and picks, even bare hands, trying to free the living from their sudden tomb. The inmates cannot possibly understand what's happening. Neither can I. James Corder at Agnew's Insane Asylum.
And in our studio in San Francisco, it appears that the world is insane at the moment. Amazingly, however, there are pockets of near normalcy. On that, we have reporter Gerald Allen at the St. Francis Hotel.
Damage to this building and most of those in the area north of Market Street is slight, and business is nearly normal, except that no one is talking about anything other than what's happening to our city. I'm talking with the bell captain, trying to reach actor John Barrymore, who's staying here at the St. Francis.
Sir, Mr. Barrymore wishes not to be disturbed.
Is he all right? He's not injured, is he?
Oh, no, sir. He's in fine shape.
It would just take a moment. He's one of our most famous visitors, and I just want to get his reaction to what's happening.
I'm afraid that's just not possible.
Why not?
Mr. Barrymore is entertaining a young lady, sir, and has already thrown a pitcher of water in the face of our building engineer, who simply wanted to inspect for damage.
Oh, I see. I'm also talking with a visiting mining engineer, Mr. John Farish. Sir, can you describe what you felt when the earthquake struck?
Well, I was awakened by a loud rumbling noise, which might be compared to the mixed sounds of a strong wind rushing through a forest and the breaking of waves against a cliff. In less time than it takes to tell, a concussion, similar to that caused by the nearby explosion of a huge blast, shook the building to its foundation, and then began a series of the liveliest motions imaginable, accompanied by a creaking, grinding, rasping sound, followed by tremendous crashes at the cornices of adjoining buildings, and chimneys tottered to the ground.
A terrifying experience, Mr. Farish.
I came to San Francisco on business, but as an engineer, I am volunteering my services to the city, to use as it wishes.
I know that's appreciated, sir. Thank you for speaking with us. And a short time ago, another illustrious visitor to our city stopped by the St. Francis, Mr. Enrico Caruso, who opened last night at the Grand Opera House as Don Jose in Carmen. Mr. Caruso is staying at the Palace Hotel, but I understand the damage there has been extensive, so he walked up here to this hotel for breakfast. I'm told he had ham and eggs and tipped the cook $2.50. When he was asked if he planned to remain here in San Francisco, Mr. Caruso replied, "Give me Vesuvius." And he vowed never to return to San Francisco. When last seen, he was clutching a photograph of President Teddy Roosevelt to his chest. Gerald Allen at the St. Francis Hotel.
More details coming in now. More than 100 inmates and employees killed at Agnew's Insane Asylum. Officials in Santa Rosa now say that every brick building in town is down. Dozens killed. Damage and death in Oakland, Salinas, Berkeley, Gilroy, Fort Bragg, Stanford, Tomales Bay, Sebastopol. Here in San Francisco, city officials are urging citizens to stay out of the downtown areas. Do not go sightseeing. Tents and kitchens are being set up in Golden Gate Park. I'm Fred Chamberlain, Radio San Francisco.
So it was the disaster that no one expected, no one planned for, the earthquake and fire of 1906. Two systems in San Francisco contributed greatly to the loss of life and property: building construction and the government itself. Most of the buildings, especially south of the slot, were wood frame structures ready to burn. And corruption in politics was as expected as the fog rolling in through the Golden Gate. Eugene Schmitz was the mayor, but Abraham Roof was the boss. Bribe-taking by city officials and department heads was common. Boss Roof himself admitted that his board of supervisors was so eager for bribes and kickbacks that they would eat the paint off a house. However, the disaster did bring a sense of unity to the city, and corruption was set aside for a time, as the humanitarian best in the civic leaders came out.
The time is noon, April 18th, 1906. I'm Fred Chamberlain, Radio San Francisco. More fires are flaring up, especially along East Street on the waterfront and south of the slot. Firemen continue to be hampered by a lack of water, but they're pumping out of the bay to fight the waterfront fires. City Hall is now $6 million worth of wreckage. There are reports that many of the support pillars were made of cheap concrete and plaster. The first shock brought much of it down. Fortunately, it all happened before office workers arrived. Reporter George Simpson is on the street, outside the wreckage of City Hall, with Mayor Schmitz.
Mayor, what's being done by your office?
The people of San Francisco are rallying. Certainly we have a critical situation, but we have weathered storms in our glorious city before, and I'm fully confident we will weather this one. I've already called for the formation of a committee. A committee of safety. 50 of our leading citizens will serve, and former Mayor James Phelan has agreed to be chairman. We need water, medical supplies, shelter. I've already dispatched messages to Governor Pardee and Mayor Mott of Oakland. I've asked the mayor to send over fire engines, hoses, and dynamite.
Why dynamite, sir?
Well, we'll have to blast some burning buildings to keep the fires from spreading. This is a time of action, and part of that action is this proclamation I am now issuing. Allow me to read it.
Go ahead, Mayor.
The federal troops, the members of the regular police force, and all special police officers have been authorized by me to kill any and all persons found engaged in looting or in the commission of any other crime. I have directed utilities not to turn on gas or electricity until I order them to do so. You may therefore expect the city to remain in darkness for an indefinite time. I request all citizens to remain at home from darkness until daylight every night, until order is restored. I warn all citizens of the danger of fire from damaged or destroyed chimneys, broken or leaking gas pipes or fixtures, or any like cause. Signed, E.E. Schmitz, Mayor.
Thank you, sir. This is George Simpson at City Hall.
Now let's round robin with our reporters for an overall view of the city at this hour. First, reporter Richard Bodie in the Mission District.
Most of the city south of the slot, south of Market, is gone or going. Many of the buildings earlier this morning slid into the filled stream beds of Mission and Willow Creeks, snapped gas and electric lines, and set off fires. Other buildings are now burning, and firemen are helpless without water. Some pumping crews have been taking water out of the sewers, but it's simply not enough. The fires, and there are many, have burned up to Market Street. Acting Chief Doherty is here. Chief, how's the battle going?
It's simply out of control. No water, not enough men, and we sorely miss the presence of Chief Sullivan. In this area and up on Market Street, we've lost the Emporium, Holbrook, Merrill and Stetson's, the Hearst Building, and the Grand Opera on Mission. We'll try to hold the fire at Market Street.
Thank you, Chief. This is Richard Bodie, south of the slot.
And to Bruce Collins in the Financial District.
I'm at the intersection of Sansom and California. The buildings here are much more substantial than in the Mission District, but all it means is that the fires are burning through them more slowly. Only the buildings along the waterfront have been somewhat spared, because firemen could pump water out of the bay. I'm talking with Battalion Chief Garrity. His men are pumping water out of an underground cistern, shooting it into the Mutual Life building. Sir, any hope of saving it?
No, there's not enough water in these old cisterns to put out a bonfire. If only those idiots at City Hall had listened to Chief Sullivan and his backup water plan, we could save most of these buildings.
If you know you can't save them, why are you even bothering?
I suppose it's like a doctor with a dying patient. We're trained and dedicated to putting out fires and saving the city. We have to try, even though we're obviously not successful. Where we are now, Sansom Street, is the western line of the fire. Back there, everything from California to Pine, we can forget. I expect the fire will cross Sansom, and it looks like the new Chronicle building will go next.
Thanks, Chief. And that's the way it is here, north of Market. Three companies of firemen in a frustrating situation, and the fires continue to move slowly westward toward Van Ness Avenue. Bruce Collins, Sansom in California.
Out in Hayes Valley, reporter George Simpson. I'm at the corner of Goff and Hayes, and we have a really hot one going here. Started in a two-story house, and it's spreading fast. There's not a single fire company on this one. Only the residents of Hayes Valley are doing what they can, and that's not much. Apparently, all the firemen are battling the other fires downtown and in the Mission District, and this one caught them by surprise. A messenger in a motor car has been dispatched, but already the fire has crossed Goff moving west, Franklin to the east, and Hayes to the south. It's now consuming four blocks of homes and moving wildly in all directions. With me is the lady of the house where the fire began.
Ham and eggs.
Ma'am?
That's right, ham and eggs. I was getting a meal for my family this morning. My husband checked the house and it didn't appear to be badly damaged. He's good about such things, you know, handy with his hands and all.
Yes.
Well, a few broken windows and fallen plaster was all, so I started a fire in the stove, and somehow the sparks from it caught the kitchen wall on fire. My husband and I tried to smother the flames with blankets, but then the blankets caught fire, and oh, it's just such a mess, and our beautiful home is gone.
Everyone got out all right.
Yes, thank the Lord, we have our lives, but no home.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. So, Fred, simple accident and another tragic fire that looks like it will burn the city, what's left of it. It may have started as a ham and eggs fire, but it has turned out to be the worst in the city so far today. This is George Simpson in Hayes Valley.
To this day, it's known as the ham and eggs fire, and eventually it burned more square miles of buildings than any other single fire that day. Like a grass fire, it swept through blocks of buildings, jumping streets with flying sparks, defying any effort to stop it. The roaring flames finally reached the Mechanics Pavilion, which had been converted into an emergency hospital. For days, the rumor was that hundreds of injured had been trapped and burned to death, but that was not so. They had been moved in time to other quarters near Golden Gate Park. More than 50 blocks were destroyed. The fire finally merged with those in the south of the slot and the Mission Districts.
KFJC. We just listened to side A of a recording called The San Francisco Earthquake, which was done in the 70s and broadcast on KNBR. Don Chamberlain was the person who did this.
All right, we'll see if Mr. Tone won't come up here and bring us a little beer and a bucket. You used to drink it out of buckets.
Everybody gets the blues sometimes. Go in your pocket, there's nothing but a nickel and a nail. And you know the nail won't spin. You got the blues. When you come home at night and the first thing you see is the cat staring at you in the driveway, you got the blues, man. A lot of people don't know when they have the blues. They should listen to the Blues Collective. Tuesdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Rotating cast of blues selectors.
I don't play no rock and roll.
Ah, what a beautiful city.
Collective, Tuesdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFJC.
That's happening tomorrow, Tuesday at 10 a.m. when Oligarch hosts the Blues Collective. I'm Cousin Mary. The show is Stream of Consciousness. Playing a lot of vinyl tonight. It's kind of a mixed bag, but hey, it's kind of fun. Let's hear a little Exotica, Arthur Lyman's Legend of the Rain on the Wave of the West, KFJC.
Thank you.
7 KFJC, that was Stan Getz doing Melancholico from the album Big Band Bossa Nova. And I started the set with Arthur Lyman's Legend of the Rain. That album's called Bahia. Irving Penn celebrates one of the 20th century's preeminent photographers and features images from a 66-year career at Vogue magazine. High fashion, celebrity portraits, photographic nudes, all taken in spare settings with trademark tonal variations, crisp lines, and rich monochrome. Penn juxtaposed both glamour and grit in works of great poise and beauty. Irving Penn is an exclusive West Coast presentation on view at the DeYoung Museum in San Francisco through July 21st. For more info, see famsf.org. I'm Cousin Mary. This is Stream of Consciousness. Tonight playing all vinyl, for better or worse. Let's hear from the Herb Geller Sextet, Rockin' Chair, on the Wave of the West, KFJC.
morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. Please sit down. Pirate radio stations. Good, 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 good. Now, I have told the Prime Minister that we will shut them down within 12 months.
As you will see, sir, they're not, in fact, outside of the law at the moment, sir.
Then they soon will be, won't they, Mr. Fredericks? You see, that's the whole point of being the government. If you don't like something, you simply make up a new law that makes it illegal. Speaking of which, Mr. Fredericks?
Yes, sir.
I think we might also start working on legislation to outlaw that haircut of yours.
You don't like it, sir?
No one likes it, apart from blind people. And I'm sure even they can sense its profound ugliness as it passes by. I'll give you a day to deal with the hair, and a fortnight to deal with the pirates. Goodbye.
Broadcasting from Foothill College.